Blog Talk Radio.
Pimp, if you want me, you can find me in the air. I'm on it, I'm on it, I'm on it, I'm on it. That's just the way it goes. I be on that shit that I had you on that I don't want no more. At this time I need all my free show to get down on the floor. If you came to rep your set, right now partner, let them know. If it's jail, like it was time for the head of the street, damn it, I go. Look, I be out in the week, straight geeks working down them street. In the stolen find the bill with 23s on the feet. To let you rock
you. Getting a little more back in town. It's your host, Ace Abiel. I'm joined by a couple different gentlemen. We're going to get right into some delicious sports action. First, I have to say hello to my co-host, Carson Phillips Spots. Carson, what's going on, my man?
Not too much, man. Just another great day in Atlanta. A little chilly, in fact. Haven't got the great weather you guys got in California, but happy to be here on Blog Talk Radio on foul territory, joined by Sam, our NBA expert. Definitely happy to have him on for him to share his insights.
Yes, Sam is one of our preeminent NBA experts, and it's the first time on the show, but we hope the first of many. And it comes on the eve of the NBA trade deadline, which is really the only news in sports right now, which is why we're getting into it first off the top, and then we'll make our own news because that's what we do. The NBA trade deadline, nothing's really happened yet. There's a few minor trades that have gone through. None of the big deals have gone down yet, but there's a lot of things that are imminent, a lot of things that are potentially going down. But before we get into all that serious breakdown, we're going to just do one little segment, one of our favorite segments. One of our most playful segments, talking about Tweet Child.
One, two, three, four. Bum. 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 She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest skies as this day thought of rain. I hate to look in just those eyes and me and I.
Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
That's quite enough, Alice. That's quite enough. We've had enough of you. So as our newcomer, we're going to let Sam kick it off. Sam Meyerkoff with his tweet of the week. Tweet Child of Mine.
Tweet Child of Mine. This is not a tweet I made. I picked out someone else's tweet. That's what I was instructed to do, correct?
Yeah, about yourself.
That's kind of too much self-promotion, though, right?
It's what Travis
it would be my
Jones
first time on the show
does.
To pick my own tweet would be...
It would be bold. Bold, to say the least.
I don't think bold would be the word I would use.
Cocky?
Maybe. But this tweet comes from Zach Lowe, and there's only been one trade now at the supposed deadline. It says, the winner of the Marcus Morris versus Patrick Patterson power forward competition is Thomas Robinson, because he was just traded to the Rockets. So
excellent. It's topical. It's comedic. It's all of the above. It's a big joke. It's about the bigs. Everybody calls him Bigs.
Yeah, I like calling my bigs Bigs.
Bigs.
Post players is a little bit too long-winded.
But all they call him is Big. There's no other word. There's just no real other... Other because they're not even post
front
players,
players
half the time, I guess. There
centers.
You go.
Yeah. No, everyone's
but they're
center,
not
though.
Just forwards. Just forwards. Capital F forwards. Capital F forwards. And capital F for Phillip Spots. Just kidding. It starts with a PH. Do you have a tweet for us this week?
I do. My tweet comes from one and only Ocho Cinco. Excuse me, Chad Johnson, formerly known as Ocho Cinco. Replying to one of his fans. A fan asked. What does a girl have to do to catch your attention? And Chad probably replied, enjoy Black Ops 2/FIFA/ cook oatmeal and eggs and help me get back to the top. That's that to me is just, you know, that's the perfect female for anybody, to be honest.
Where does Chad O's chill in the off season? Where does he make his home?
That's a good question.
I think Miami.
Miami?
Of course. That's where everybody's That's where all the stars are at.
Is he in Miami? Yeah. Might be around A-Town.
Show him with Lil Wayne. Maybe. I mean,
he might show his face around.
It's a short flight in his tricked out Louis Vuitton plane. So just a short flight.
The Claremont Lounge is always worth that flight.
The Clounge is always worth it. again, one of our sponsors, Claremont Lounge. The one and only Claremont Lounge. There is not another. There will never be another. And our, another sponsor we have to mention is backsportspage.com. The only place for hard-hitting interviews and sports commentary. Interviews can hit you really hard. I'm not talking about analysis. I'm talking about heartfelt stuff. Back Sports Page, get over there. I have one tweet for you to round out our Tweet Child of Mine segment. And it's from my favorite Twitter monster, my favorite Twitter beast, Rob Delaney. He's hairy. He is partially clothed. And he's ready for you to read his words. And he said, "Not all Canadian people are monsters." That's Rob Delaney with a little bit of prejudice to start the evening off right.
I don't know. It's such like a controversial tweet for you to pick.
It
that is.
I
think Canadians are.
I don't think they, I don't think you're American if you don't think Canadians are monsters. Are you saying you don't support the troops, Sam?
I'm saying I consider Minnesota a part of Canada.
So you don't support. You don't support military veterans from Minnesota?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. You heard it on the air first. To all our many tens of thousands of listeners, Sam Meyerkopf is a little bit anti-America. That's okay.
Anti-Minnesota.
Minnesota. Anyway.
Anti the upper Midwest. It's flyover country, and we're going to fly over to the National Basketball Association. And let's get into the headlines first, and then we'll speculate on what could be the headlines during the next 24 hours or so, 20 hours. So, Sam, what is the number one headline right now? What's just gone down in the NBA trade landscape?
Well, we talked there. Thomas Robinson is going to go to the Rockets, but Patrick Patterson to the Kings and Marcus Morris to the Suns to reunite with his twin, Markieff, which is pretty cool, but pretty not that big of name switching all around. Like, all those guys are pretty big question marks. Thomas Robinson, talent, but like, who knows really? He sucked on the Kings, but it's the Kings. They're just like a mess.
Yeah.
But everyone wants to know like big names, right?
Sam, before you continue, what happened to Terrence Jones? It seems like the Rockets drafted all these guys and none of them on the team right now.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of odd. It's like the Rockets. Some of the guys, like, they draft all these people. I don't know if they're just drafting them to trade them or, like, actually fit them. Like, Donatas Mantiunas, what up? Go Lithuania. is an animal in the D-League, but he's not getting the pub he needs playing for the Rio Grande Vipers. So maybe T. Jones gets more minutes now.
Yeah.
Because, like, Thomas Robinson's still a rookie, so they're not going to, like, run him as much as they ran Pat Patterson.
It's an interesting theory,
so they
though.
Traded away Pat Patterson and Marcus Morris, right? They traded away both their starting power forwards. So they must trust Terrence Jones, right?
They must. They're going to give him some playing.
I mean, all drafted. I'm thinking these guys came out to steal with three great college players, and Lamb, Terrence Jones, and Royce Wyatt. You know, problems he's been having, but it just seems like right now, like absolutely nothing going on.
Yeah, it's an interesting theory though. The Rockets drafting people just as tradable assets because with the amount that they've been wheeling and dealing, I wouldn't put it past them. Wow, Bill Simmons is short.
Or
he is next to Jalen. Jalen's not that tall, is he?
But also, like, are they getting Thomas Robinson to trade him again for, like, a bigger trade? Are they trying to get Josh Smith?
True.
Like, something like that. So
I think Thomas Robinson could succeed. I think he can become a rare player in today's league, but a guy who just operates off the block. And I think, you know, he maybe is a tiny bit undersized, but he's got the motor. He's very polished from his years in college. And I think he could be that solid low-post contributor that they need.
Yeah, the only thing is, do the Rockets just throw up threes? So he hasn't hit any threes. Can T. Jones hit the tray ball?
I don't know about that.
Terrence Jones.
Yeah, he's off with the three goggles. He's got to be able to hit some threes.
Terrence Jones can hit threes a little bit because they shoot so many threes. Maybe Domantas can get missed. I mean, this is Domantas, right? Domantas can stroke threes, though. This team put the most threes in the NBA. Like,
yeah.
Maybe they're going to play T-Rob with, like, the five more and switch him in, like, Ashika.
Just run people off the floor. I mean, they
– and just get up and down still. All they do is get up and down.
About opening up those three balls off of penetration. And if you're a big man, you can get a few, you know, a few baskets here and there, but, you know, you're going to have to adapt to a certain extent to that crazy style of offense where they, how many shots they get up a game?
I'm going to go see who's starting for them tonight, man. Don't tell Mike my starting lineup.
I don't know about that.
But anyway, but the bigger thing is, like, where is Dwight Howard going to move? Is Josh Smith going to move? Is, like, Monte Ellis going to move?
Yeah.
That's the more interesting thing. We're talking about tons of Josh Smith trades today.
Yeah, we went through 59 different scenarios.
Because, like, if he's not – Atlanta's not going to sign him, then, like, I think just get rid of him, but you don't think that's quite
– I don't know.
If
we're not getting a legitimate player in return, if we're just doing a kind of thing where we're salary dumping or looking for contracts that are going to expire, I don't know. That seems like almost a waste of time. If we can get a young, really promising player, especially if we could get a young, promising five – or even a one. I mean, I love Teague, but, you know, if we could get a point guard, you know, or even a peer two. We were talking about potential trades for twos, like a guy who we brought up is Eric Gordon, even though he's been hurt, one of the few pure shooting guards in the league and one of the better ones when he's healthy. But trading Smith just for the sake of trading him, I don't necessarily buy that. There's still a chance you could re-sign him, you know, maybe not for the max. I mean, I know he's posturing, but that's always a negotiation. Maybe he's not as unhappy in Atlanta.
In the first half today, Donatas played 5 minutes. He scored 2 points, 2 rebounds. That's it. But now you also, Hasheem Thabeet started for the Thunder.
Really?
Wow.
The beat goes on.
What a lucky bastard.
The beat goes on. Yeah.
The beat goes on indeed.
Your favorite school, Carson, Georgetown?
UConn.
Yeah, no, he went to UConn. He's a Big East guy, but Georgetown put a thumping on DePaul tonight, side note. But
City Center.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys make a good point about Josh Smith trade, however. I think that's a great point you guys are making, the fact that unless we get some sort of legitimate prospect, be it a young, unproven prospect, we shouldn't let him go just to clear up cap space. I feel like if we do let him go, I mean, we'd have a lot of holes to fill via free agency in the draft, but I don't know if they could all get
fit. Forget about Ivan Johnson, dude.
Yeah.
Ivan the Great?
Ivan the Terrible. Just put him in wherever.
He is muscle-bound, and he can rebound. He can just scoop up boards. I mean, I would love to get a couple first-round picks because I was honestly looking at this draft, and it looks pretty loaded to me. I don't know from
who. Who is picked?
I don't know. It's a good question. You're our freaking NBA corresponding.
All right, so other trades. I think the Lakers should move Dwight Howard, but they're going to.
Doesn't sound like
it. It just seems like that's built to end.
What about Powell? Is there any chance he gets moved even though he's injured?
They brought up an interesting trade. They brought up an interesting trade, Carson. They said – just rumors on the NBA Canada show. Pau for Andre Iguodala. And I like it a lot for both teams. I like it a lot for Denver. Denver doesn't really need Iggy. And Lakers obviously need to change something. And Iggy's a hard-nosed guy, the opposite of Pau's. Good, but kind of a softie. Not what they need. And he can play, like, 8 different positions.
Pau's
like the perfect D'Antoni player. He's like Sean Marion. He can play the 4 for them.
And him and Artest can really clamp down on defense.
Oh, my God. Talk about, like, an OKC, like, if they're the 1-8.
Yeah.
And then, like, you throw Iggy on KD or Artest on KD and the other one on Westbrook.
Yeah.
That's wishing you had Harden then.
That's legit.
Yeah. Interesting. I like that trade.
Yeah. Yeah. Go Bill Simmons.
These things won't happen, though.
But the complicated
One thing is, you know, you got to see if they're going to put Powell on suicide watch if he leaves, you know, L.A.
Oh, Powell. See, I don't know. I would kill for him to be on the Hawks, even still.
Yeah, I mean, I would, but I feel like Powell's going to have a mental breakdown. I mean, there were trade rumors about him a couple years ago, and he was, you know, got depressed.
Yeah.
All right, Hawks fans. So the Suns have
Spanish players are moody.
The Suns have the 5th pick and the 13th pick.
Okay.
Is that too much for Josh Smith, though?
No.
Would you do the deal?
Just only that?
Just that.
Yeah. If we're not going to re-sign him.
You would, too much, yeah.
I think I would do it.
It's too much. You guys already have the 16th pick and the 19th pick. Maybe you give him one of those.
Yeah.
And then you move up.
Oh, we already have the 16 and 19.
Yeah.
Wait, they already have the lottery?
No, lottery starts at 14.
Right, so who knows. But, yeah, I mean, it could be a sort of protected situation.
No, like we said earlier, don't trade Josh Smith for Chris Humphreys and Marshawn Brooks.
That's the thing. I'd rather have a really high pick than, like, Chris Humphreys.
Yeah.
I'd rather at least have the excitement of someone.
The one thing I'm scared of is the Celtics. There's no need for it. I don't think you're going to get enough for him. I don't see a reason to do it. So just begs, like, maybe there's just all these rumors, but not much is going to happen. But I think the Jazz are going to move either Millsap or Jefferson. So if, like, a contending team can pick up one of them, so to clear playing time for Derek Favors and Enes Kanter, if a team can pick up Jefferson or Millsap, they could be the third best player on a conference final team. You know what I mean? So, like, if the Thunder are able to swing, like, Perry Jones, a pick, and Jeremy Lamb for, like, Al Jefferson, you know what I mean? Or something like that. Or one of these contending teams, if Indiana or, you know, if one of these teams can swing for one of them, I think it could be. And then also one thing I'm wondering is the Spurs, I think, are going to make, like, some low-key move. Like, some move that doesn't really rate. Like, you're not like, oh, you're like, oh, whatever. But
so what are their needs?
So their needs are...
I mean, I feel like they need more size, too, no?
They could use a little more size. They're trying to get rid of Juwan Blair, supposedly. But they could use, like a new Matt Bonner. You know what I mean? Like, a new version of that. Or a guard who can kind of create, because Ginobili is half countable now, and as good as Parker is, you don't want to wear him down too much.
Right, someone who can come in and
so they could
Parker.
Sneak like some backup like scoring guard who like maybe he gets discarded a little bit because he's you know whatever and like turn look at turn him anyone into a much better player than what they already are.
Yeah.
So I would see them and then the Jazz and the Spurs.
Okay.
Could be interesting.
I like Millsap a lot. Carson, he's my boy. How do you feel about Paul Millsap? You there? Carson seemed to be having some technical difficulties. We'll bring him back in an instant. But
Carson does love that Paul Millsap game.
He does. I thought he did. But he liked it so much that the connection shorted out because he was screaming so loud. But I love Millsap. I mean, he is a workhorse down low. I love guys who crash the boards. He's like a rich man's, maybe a poor man's Kenneth Fareed. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Kenneth Fareed might be pretty good.
His ceiling might be
what?
Might be top 15 player in the league. Who knows?
All right, so now we get this one. We hear the Clippers.
Uh-oh.
The Clippers or the T-Wolves are both after Paul Millsap.
Okay.
So the Clippers might do an Eric Bledsoe for Paul Millsap switch. So now the Jazz get their point guard of the future,
mm-hmm.
and the Clippers get like a guy, a banger, another guy in the post when they don't really need Eric Bledsoe. Like they have Chauncey Billups, Jamal Crawford.
Shoot free throws, right?
So now you can play a crunch time lineup if you don't want to play DeAndre because he's effective shooting.
Yeah.
Play a crunch
Griffin
time lineup of Griffin Millsap.
Yeah,
so you can go something like CP, Jamal, Grant Hill, Matt Barnes probably to have like your defensive guy, Millsap, Griffin. If some team's going to come back, because you can play against the Thunder.
Yeah, that's
if they go Ibaka at the five.
Yeah, Millsap and Griffin up front.
But if you go against a bigger team, not that many of them, though.
No.
If you go against a bigger team, like, nah, LA's out of it. So you're good. You can play that lineup.
Yeah.
That's a nice closing lineup.
It's a very nice lineup.
And then,
I mean, Memphis. You know, you can face Memphis. And
You can face Memphis.
So
Memphis,
then you need,
Memphis is kind of in flux right now.
Yeah,
you know,
need
like,
those three bigs as a rotation to come in and provide energy. And, yeah, that's a lot of scoring up front. But, you know,
so
I like him going to Minnesota,
too. So apparently
this too.
Is pretty serious. Millsap for Caron Butler and Eric Bledsoe.
Okay.
Might be a thing.
Interesting.
So I like that. Like,
yeah.
Now if the Clippers get him, do you see them, like, going up against the Thunder or the Heat? Or if you can include the Spurs as, like, a title contention?
I think I do. Because of Chris Paul. Just mostly because of Chris Paul. I know everybody talks about their deep team. And they really do, and they have a lot of guys who can score. But I just think Paul is the man, and I think he's the closer, and I think he's going to be the difference. I still think they're a full step behind the Thunder, just in terms of their firepower. And they do lose something there when Chris Paul's off the floor if they're getting rid of Bledsoe.
They might have to switch it around, though. So, like, now Chauncey plays backup one.
Yeah.
He's going to play off ball a lot.
That could happen.
But, like, now maybe you give Jamal Crawford too much rope. So it
right.
does affect, because Eric Bledsoe was, like, the perfect backup. Like, come in, create havoc.
Right.
Like, he's the perfect.
Oh, yeah, he totally takes over the game.
Yeah,
the
so his energy is crazy. So now maybe their bench unit falls off. But I guess it's the risk you take to get Millsap, you know?
Yeah. I think it is. And
also, dude, you're got to be hoping Chris Paul resigns, because then you just trade away Eric Bledsoe, who could have been your point guard.
Yeah, true.
You know? So
as a Hawks fan, let's scoop in on Chris Paul and not make that same mistake. Well, let's talk about the Jazz side of that a little bit, if that potential trade. So imagine Millsap's out, maybe Favors steps into that four spot, gets a little comfortable there. Then you have Bledsoe at the one, and you have a nice little team shaping up. They're in the seventh spot right now. They're holding position for a playoff spot. Is this a team you think is at all close to at least winning, you know, maybe a playoff series or stringing a couple together?
Yeah, it's all about the development of their big men. It's all about Derek Favors and his canter. Like, we know Gordon Hayward's going to be, like, a good role player. We know Eric Bledsoe's going to be a good player, but he's a little too erratic to be, like, a stud.
Yeah.
Alex Burks, their, like, 10th overall pick, hasn't really done too much. So if Favors can be, like, Amari Stoudemire and his canter can be Marc Gasol, then, like, yeah, they're going to have a really good team. Or if one of them can reach something, they can build around it.
Right.
But, like, you need to get rid of Jefferson and Millsap so you can know if that's a possibility, because without you're in this constant state of not knowing, then you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah,
you're just stuck in this is as good as it can be right now.
Yeah, that's fair. Heck, I'd like to see the Hawks go after Jefferson. I know the Jazz would not be looking to trade for Josh Smith. That doesn't really make sense for them, I don't think. They're trying to get rid of bigs, but Jefferson is a guy who's actually one of the true centers in the league and can really clog up that lane. He's got a variety of low post moves. He plays good defense down there. Really changes shots. So, yeah, I mean,
But you might be able to. The Hawks would have to part with something. Like, you'd have to part. So we have to part with at least one of your picks, and then one of your shooters, like Morwer, Korver, and then something else. I just don't know if they want to take Josh Smith back. Yeah, I don't think they do.
Yeah,
so, would you? You probably wouldn't part with Teague, right?
In theory, no. Bringing on another point.
Right. So maybe if they would do, I don't know, would you do both picks and like Korver and Morrow for Jefferson?
I don't know. I just don't know if I think he's really good, but he's probably worth two draft picks. Yeah, he's definitely worth. Yeah, I guess I'd do that.
So you do that deal? Jazz think about that.
Yeah.
Because they need to get rid of one of them. Like, it's not helping their team, I think, to have both Millsap and Jefferson.
Right.
Like,
don't you think they'd rather have Eric than
yeah, they would.
He's proven that he's good.
Yeah, they would. Oh, it's a good deal for the Jazz, too. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I like that deal because it helps everyone all around, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what works.
Do we have any other potential stuff or any other things that have gone down? I want to get real soon to the NFL Combine, but I can always come back with
that's kind of or is that
did we touch on the Rondo rumors? Any way to that?
So it's weird because trading someone who just tore up their ACL is like really odd. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But the one Bill Simmons proposed was Rondo and Brandon Bass for one of the Hawks picks that we said, like the 16th overall pick, Josh Smith and Za.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Celtics fan, I don't like that because I like my guys. And I don't know why Rondo's always included in these rumors. Like, he's got to be a head case. But so is Josh Smith. So it's like, does that trade get the Celtics close to a championship? That's the question. Like, that means we're saying screw blowing it up. We're going to suck in 2 years badly, but we're going for it this year and next year. Like, that's it. We're just throwing everything at it. So is Jace move, Garnett, Pierce, Avery Bradley, Jet Terry, and like a handful of reserves going to get us a title?
No.
No, probably not.
Probably not, but it'd be a fun team.
Okay, I was talking to Asa about this earlier today, indefinitely, because I think Josh Smith could be really good, like defensive player of the year. He just needs to stop taking jumpers. He needs to go inside. He needs to be, like, a legit power four or a center. I know he's an undersized center, so it'd be tough to do that, but for limited minutes. But if some coach, like, if Doc Rivers and KG's, like, get in his head and be like, dude, just bang. Just go in there and be like Amari. Like, on his pick and roll, like, we can toss it up to him. Like, just go bang. He could be really good. So if the Sellers turn him into, like, a freaking all-star beast, yeah, but even still, I'm not sure that's enough to beat Miami.
Yeah.
If you guys give up Rondo for Smooth, like, who's for the point? Is it going to be Barbosa? Like, who's going to be the point guard? Cause I know that, you know, the Seas rely so heavily on Rondo. And, I mean, you know, last year, KG came out saying publicly, like, Rondo's going to determine how far that team goes in the playoffs. Like, with the aging team, I feel like they rely on him so much. I feel like Jay Smoove, you know, definitely be a threat offensively if they get him in the right situation. But just, you know, facilitating, see where that would come from.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think they're saying, but Reynolds up for the year. So we're getting someone for the year. We're getting like an all-star type player for the rest of the year, and we don't have one. We're basically saying we're just our whole element.
Present versus future value.
Screw any type of future. Just like this is our two-year window.
Yeah.
Like everyone talks about the Celtics blowing it up. That would be them like totally reloading, going for Christian. Right. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't think Danny.
Well,
wants
here's
to
the
do
thing
that.
About trading for Rondo, which I kind of like for certain teams, is that it's a creative way to tank for a higher pick.
Real
you
creative.
You trade one of your good players for Rondo, who at his peak is one of the best players in the league, but is out this whole season. Your team suffers. You lose games. You get a better draft pick, and then next year you have Rondo and hopefully, you know, some studly guy you turn that draft pick into. So that could work for some teams. I mean, the Hawks are in playoff shape, so I don't think I think even if Josh Smith goes out, they have – or if they lose Josh Smith and only got back Rondo, I still think they have a decent chance to hang on for one of those spots. But certain other teams who aren't in the playoff chase, you know, who are looking at already basically looking towards next year, that could be an interesting idea.
Honestly, I think – see, I'm not sure if the Hawks do this, but this is, like, the best trade for the Lakers, I think. Like, Dwight for Jay Smoove and Korver. Like, the Lakers would just – that'd be perfect for them, I think. But, like, did you think – like, where do we think Dwight's going to end up? Like, he's a free agent. He can go anywhere he wants. Like, where do you think he's going to end up eventually? Who's he going to play for next year?
Houston.
Houston?
I don't know.
Like, he could be for anywhere. Like, he could play anywhere. I don't know if he wants to stay with the Lakers.
I don't know.
I don't think he wants to. Like, I don't know where he would go. I mean, I feel like everywhere that seems to be a great situation for him, he just cries his way out.
Right.
I mean, Orlando, you know,
who's going to put up with that? And where is a big enough thing for him? I mean, maybe
now he's sad and, like, you know.
Maybe Brooklyn. Dude, that's the thing. Brooklyn will go over, like, any type of cap or whatever. So if Dwight says, I'll go to Brooklyn, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
I can see that. And if he has some connection with Humphrey. With Aaron Williams, I guess he wanted to play with him in the first place. So,
Do we think it's like a permanent like down switch for Bill, or just like a little funky in right now?
I think it might. I think this is what he is. I don't think there were a couple years
now
where
bad
it was almost comical.
So now it's a bad sign. You need to do it, I guess. 500, dude, or whatever it is, or to have a guy who's not an all star.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a borderline all-star. I just think there were a couple of years where he and Chris Paul were kind of going back and forth. I think Chris Paul is a clear head and shoulders taller than him now when it comes to best point guard in the NBA. You know, I don't even know if Darren is in the top five anymore, based on the season at least, if you did a power ranking.
Point guards?
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
If you include Rondo, I mean, my top five point guards. So CP has the crown.
Obviously.
T. Parker would be my two.
Kyrie's
probably my three.
Kyrie's
wow.
Just wait, is Rondo counting this even though he's hurt?
We say
what D Rose counting this because he's hurt?
No to both of them because they're out.
Because they're out. Because if they were, D Rose would be two
behind
CP, and Rondo would probably be.
Yeah, I mean
three.
D Rose.
But T Parker's having a crazy year. So I got CP crown, T Parker, Kyrie. Who are the point guards?
Who are the point guards? Eric Bledsoe might be top.
No.
obviously Jeremy Lin is number 8 on the list.
Jeremy's either.
Okay.
Who are the point guards? Who are the other
point guards?
Oh, Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook is
I think he's ahead of Kyrie.
I'd rather have Kyrie.
Yeah,
four,
but we're power ranking it.
And then 5 is I guess it's D Will.
Okay, but so he's we
have. You know what though?
Ty
Who's
Lawson.
To say I would rather take D Will over Steph Curry?
What about Ty Lawson?
Or Drew Holiday?
Yeah.
Who's to say
LeBron James is a point guard? We're
who's to say D Will is better than them? I think
LeBron James is a point forward.
That's who I want to run my. I don't care if my team looks like an NBA team. I shouldn't think it was far. It should just all be 6'8" guys. I don't care. Well, that's an interesting speculation. I think the Nets could be in play. I did hear a rumor that. I mean, this could have been from any bogus writer. I don't remember exactly who reported this, but that Dwight Howard had actually been telling other players, looking forward to playing in Brooklyn next year. I don't know if that'll happen. And he'll just go and they'll shift half the guys off there and they'll still be a dysfunctional team. And even when Joe Johnson hits last minute shots, it won't matter because they'll still be a five seed. Let's talk about some combine, because the combine started today. Am I right?
It actually starts next week, I believe.
Okay.
Let me double check. I believe the 23rd is the first day. And then it goes on to early next week. But yeah, definitely excited about the combine and the prospects that will be there. Yeah, so it's February 23rd to the 26th. We're looking at, and so a lot of top athletes, top ranking guys will be there. And I wanted to just take a second out and talk about a couple guys I think have the opportunity to make an impact in terms of how the draft will play out in April. I know that, there are some headliners, guys that are supposed to make impacts, guys who are supposed to be, highly ranked guys. I wanted to, just talk about a couple guys that may surprise if they play their cards right and do well in Indianapolis.
So a lot of the guys rated really highly by our boy Mel Kiper Jr., by Todd McShay, another draft expert, defensive lineman this year. Now, I'm led to believe that you took a look at a defensive lineman as well that could make a huge impact in the combine and kind of vault his draft status up a bit. Who are you taking a look at?
I'm looking at a guy named Barcavius Mingo. He's a guy who plays at LSU. He's a defensive end in college. I think he'll end up projecting to be a out linebacker just because of his size. He's about 6'3", 230, 240. And a lot of times in these, he's 6'5", 240. He's a lanky guy, but definitely has that potential to be an outside linebacker. And in these combine situations, it'll take time to work him out at the linebacker position, seeing how he moves with his hand not in the ground. Playing from that upright position, I think that can help the stock a lot if he A, runs and tests well, and then B, sort of the positional stuff proves he can catch on and play that position. So I think that he's going to be a guy to look forward to. He's extremely athletic, very fast, very nimble. And then, I think that, if the cards play out, I think he might be able to sneak up into that four spot with Philadelphia, seeing if Chip Kelly wants to go defensive, they definitely do have some
Chip Kelly's going offense.
You say what?
This is loaded, though. That offense is super loaded.
Eagle?
Yeah, the offense is loaded, and Chip Kelly, it'd be hard to see him going offense at the four pick. I think if Luke Jockel, the tackle out of Texas A&M is available, that he takes him there just because the offensive line struggled so much to protect Michael Vick.
Yeah.
But I think Lou Jock will probably go in the first two picks. So yeah, at that four spot, they might go Barcavius Mingo to sort of be an edge rusher, outside linebacker type in Chip Kelly's defense.
Barcavius Mingo, another SEC defensive lineman. It seems like LSU just cranks guys out year after year.
Just guys turn them out.
Star of that defense, but a lot of them shoot up the draft board and many of them for their performance at the combine. Now I have a more general question before we get to the next young man on your list. Is it entirely up to the players at which drill they do? And then the second part of that is, for a player like Mingo, who you're saying is going to be doing a little of a positional shift from the D-line to kind of an outside linebacker, pass rusher, edge rusher role, does he choose to participate in drills like trying to cover a receiver or testing his ability to catch the ball, things that maybe he doesn't excel at, but that he feels that he has kind of honed over his preparation for the combine?
Yeah, and they usually sort of, I think they sort of separate the combine into sort of two sort of halves, the half that encompasses the 40, the bench press, the vert, just sort of like the pure, the lifts, the things of that nature, the pure sort of numbers aspect of it. And they have the second half of it, it has to do with the throwing, the three-cone drill, lateral movement, positional stuff. So not only do they run through the actual physical testing, but actual, they have guys run through drills and the offensive linemen, they, you know, take them through the progression, zone blocking, bring out, you know, pads and have them work in groups to see how they move, footwork, things of that nature. So
they do everything.
You say what?
They do everything. They do almost everything that you would do in a practice, or you know, as a,
yeah, pretty much everything in a practice that's not padded. You know, they work you through position drills. I think that for the thing for Mingo is going to be, yeah. I mean, if he also decides to, he can help his stock a lot because I mean, guy, I mean, he's played with his hand on the ground his entire career at the defensive end position at LSU. They could afford to use him there and rehab on the edge. But in the NFL, he's going to be undersized, and he'll need to make the transition. And depending on how he does in those drills, and coaches sort of get to see and feel how he moves, he can do a lot to help his stock. Because you know, as an outside linebacker, edge rusher guy, you know, a guy like Von Miller we talked about last week, who can come off the edge, but can also cover and do some things at the linebacker position, makes him extremely valuable for a defense. So look for him to take advantage of those drills and work his way into the sort of the top half of the front.
Okay, well, we'll be looking for Mingo there, possibly in the top 10. So we talked about the defensive side of the ball. Let's go to the skill positions. And what is a skill position player that you think is going to improve his draft stock at the combine and a guy you got your eye on?
Well, a guy that I have my eye on, you know, at the wide receiver position, a guy named Tavon Austin, a guy who was an absolute playmaker for West Virginia last year. You know, played a multitude of roles, you know, not only, you know, in offense, on the offensive scheme, but also in special teams. A guy who's small in stature, but extremely fast, extremely agile, has a really good ability, innate ability to make defenders miss. And I think that he is, you know, in the right system. And we talked about it. I think that he will make his way into the first round. And like you said, in a team that fits his needs and skill sets would be just absolutely a great fit for him. You know, Philly, I think, would be a great team for him, but four is very, very high.
Yeah.
But I think that you might look at a team like Pittsburgh at 17. You know, they had a guy in Chris Rainey who they expect a lot out of. Didn't quite get what they wanted out of him. Ended up cutting him in the offseason. That could be a good place for him to help out. Not only like sort of, yeah, that's true. That's a good point. And you know, I think he can help out teams in the right system. So I think that, you know, I think his numbers will jump out at people, and I think that the more they see him work out, the more he tests, you know, his tests will intrigue teams, and he'll find his way into the first round. So Tavon Austin's a guy, you know, who can be, you know, another piece in a great offense if given the opportunity. So I think
for him. So Austin, you know, we'd like to see him in the slot, maybe kind of an Ace Sanders type guy. What is his number one tool? What is his number one skill? Is he blazing speed? Is he a shifty guy? Does he have great hands? What is the number one thing that stands out with him?
I think this is his overall athletic ability. I think his hands are decent and serviceable, but just the fact that the speed and agility combination just makes him such a threat. You know, you get the ball in his hand, he's liable to break a couple of tackles, make a couple of people miss it, and just take it to the house. So I think, you know, when you get a guy like that on your team, and the thing about him, you can use him in so many ways. You can line up in the backfield, you can put him on end rounds, you can spread him out, you know, at the flanker or bring him into the slot, put him in the wildcat. You know, just getting the ball in his hands makes him an absolute threat. You know, at that position, you know, on your offense. So I think this is versatility, one, and then his sort of speed, agility combo, two, makes him a very intriguing prospect to be a guy that can definitely help out in a lot of ways.
All right. I like that. Tavon Austin, you heard it here first. Look for him to explode in the NFL combine. Okay. Who else do you have for us, Carson, that's going to make a splash in the combine coming up?
Another guy I have for you guys, another defensive lineman, Bjorn Warner, a guy coming out of Florida State. He has an interesting story. He's actually born in Berlin, didn't start playing football until a pretty old age, and, you know, came to Florida State. I think they do a good job of recruiting internationally or getting guys to come play football. They had another guy, you know, off the tackle who played basketball from Britain, you know, who's growing into a great player. Highly effective at the defensive end position for you know 2-3 years now, and I think that he projects to be a very good 4-3 defensive end prospect. He's on the smaller side. He's 255. He's 6'4", 255. He can definitely afford to put on some weight. But when you look at this guy, besides the fact that he's white, you look at him and you sort of see a J.J. Watt type. He's got his big arms, big upper body, you know, just a very thick person. But he also has great motor, great explosiveness, and definitely a guy that's pesky for offensive linemen. He, you know, doesn't give up on plays and can definitely do damage, not only in the run game, but also pass rushing, getting pressure on the passer.
He will eat the schnitzel and pack on pounds.
He is. He's a German blitzkrieg. And, you know, I saw some projections of him going top five in the draft this year. And, you know, as the time goes by, I think that he can use the combine, especially when the positional drills and the bench press. You know, if he shows up at, you know, 265, 270, I think he might have solidified a spot in that top 10, you know, top 10 picks of the draft. And I think that he could possibly end up going to Detroit. I think when you look at Detroit's needs, they have a need at the right defensive end spot. Also at the cornerback position, but the cornerback class is a little deeper, and I don't think you spend a fourth overall pick at the corner position at that jump. You can get guys in the second round that might be serviceable and might help your team out. So I think that he might be a person that can fit well into the system, you know, especially depending on how he plays and how he works at the combine.
Yeah, Detroit has had a little bit of a hole on one side of that line, and you know, with guys departing, and has been a little bit of a revolving door on one side. But maybe now they have a final solution for you know, plugging that hole and you know, providing consistent pass rushers across the defensive line. Bjorn Werner, you heard it here first. He's only been playing football for he only played 2 years in high school, right?
Yeah, he was definitely a late bloomer, and he just, you know, sort of got in that system and took off. And I actually wanted to make one more reference to a guy, Ezekiel Ansah, a guy from Ghana, from BYU. Look out for him. He was a sprinter, a track guy, and, you know, ended up at BYU, started playing very, very raw at the Senior Bowl. You know, he got beat up a little bit by, you know, offensive tackles, you know, easy to play the DN position. Because the tackles understood the game better than him. They knew about leverage and positioning better than he did. But a very raw prospect who's intrigued a lot of scouts. Look for him to be another guy that might sneak his way in the first two rounds, depending on how he does at the combine.
I like that. And I trust that you're going to be glued to the TV, or at least checking all the updates and 40 times from your phone?
Oh, well, yeah. Well, they have the combine is streaming, you know, online now. So, you know, probably going to be the three of the least productive days I've had at work.
Screen and screen, baby.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good time. Excited, and definitely keep you guys posted on, you know, on what we find.
Yeah. Yeah, we will, next week we'll have a lot of the results, and we will have, you know, this is a quick thing. You're able to predict it 1 week and see how right or terribly wrong you were the next. And that's always exciting. And is Matt Barkley, didn't he say he's not going to throw? Is that official now?
Is he on the biggest pussy ever?
Oh, he is. Every USC quarter. Every single one.
I think he's going to hold off to the pro day. I mean, obviously, he wasn't able to play in the last.
I like that golden sunshine in Southern California. Makes my throws.
Sparkle.
They spiral and they sparkle.
Like, what's the like about him? If you're a team, I would not be excited if my team.
He's really good at bleaching his hair, so that's, yeah. That's something that he puts in his.
So they get like a playoff run. He can like bleach everyone's hair. It's like a cool like team.
Yeah, and a puka shell necklace too.
He's the worst, man. I don't like him.
I don't like him.
The quarterback. Do you like any quarterbacks in this draft? I don't like Geno Smith.
I like Geno.
I went to Syracuse, and I don't like Ryan
Geno's
Nassib
as
like a first, second
big
round guy.
Freaking arm. And hard
he's
not going to
be good, dude. He's not going to be a good quarterback.
I don't believe it.
He's like, dude, he's just, he throws it up, dude. He's not like an actually good quarterback, no.
How can you say
it? I like.
A
know,
lot.
And,
he played cute all
you
the
guys
time.
Are forgetting. You guys are forgetting one person in this draft who I'm really high on. A guy by the name of Tyler Bray.
Oh, my God. Irrational love for him.
What, the Tennessee guy?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Y'all watch. You know, as Mel Kiper said a couple years back, you heard here first, Tyler Bray is not going to be a bust. He's going to be an NFL quarterback. He's going to be a perennial Pro Bowler if he's in my situation.
Dude, the thing,
perennial Pro Bowler?
Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Just,
that's it.
And just with these USC quarterbacks, man, it's like, so who'd we have? We had freaking Mark Sanchez has been a stud, right?
Obviously. Carson Palmer was good until he broke.
Matt Leinart was elite.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Such a beast. No, I'm saying.
Matt Castle's really turned out well now.
Really poopy mixed bag. It's
yeah.
Mixed bag. Carson Palmer's easily the best one in recent memory, and he's had a very mediocre second half of his career.
Mediocre to bad second half.
I don't know, man. He's one of the best quarterbacks over the last 10 years. He's in the top.
So, Tyler Bray, I'm not feeling it. Anyone else?
I'm telling.
Can you see my teeth into?
What about that? What's that dude's name? What do you say?
See, he might be the next Tom Brady.
There's only one, my friend. There's only one.
big of a douchebag.
Yeah, what about, like, the Oklahoma dude? Is Landry Jones, is he even, like, on radars?
I was huge on Landry Jones.
He's like a top 10 guy
a
couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, after his sophomore, junior year, you know, I thought he was definitely going to be, you know, a great player, but he just underwhelmed.
Yeah,
like Matt Barkley just didn't really do what he was supposed to do his senior year. So,
but I still think someone's gonna. It happens every year. Quarterbacks shoot up the board. People get desperate. They see their team.
It's gonna be Ryan Nesbitt.
It's gonna be Ryan Nesbitt.
He's gonna go in that first round. I think he's gonna go higher than people think.
I don't care where he goes.
He has
to say right now he's not gonna be good.
I think that he's gonna get drafted a lot higher than people think. And that's going to put a lot of pressure on him, creating a situation. If what you say is true and he's not good, and I think that's a very good chance, he could be seen as a huge bust and one that people saw coming. But all it takes is one team who gets QB happy, and he's got kind of the look of a QB. He's maybe not the greatest, but he's got the look of it, and I think you will be surprised. I mean, didn't Ryan Tannehill go 10th overall or something?
Yeah.
He was a wide receiver the year before.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what
move
I'm
on. Move on from quarterback. Move on from quarterback.
You know what? You don't have any say in the matter, so why don't you just politely exit the room? yeah, he's going to go ahead and do that for us. Thank you, Sam. He'll be back in a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, we're excited to see the combine. So who actually is throwing? That's not maybe the most exciting part. I mean, I'm all about the weight drills and the 40, personally.
Yeah, I gotta say, I'm not quite sure who's in. People sort of on the fence based on his injury and not trying to fall out of the third round. I guess I don't know what worse could come of it. Definitely intimacy and those drills are always cool in the whip around coverage. Should be good. I think, you know, like you said, you know, Geno Smith ends up going. You know, they said Matt Barkley's not throwing. That just got confirmed. Geno Smith will be throwing. So good to see him, a guy that, you know.
Yes, come out and
could
throw.
Could possibly separate himself at the quarterback.
This is the one thing I don't get, is the coddling of, like, these not, like, insanely good prospects. All right, so if Anthony Davis is at the NBA Combine, okay, we get it. He doesn't need to do this. You know what I mean? If Trent Richardson last year doesn't, okay, I'm cool if he sits out. Like, that dude's proven.
Okay.
His shit.
What are you getting to?
These people like Matt Barkley and whoever like that need to still prove something that aren't just like a guaranteed elite-level prospect, throw. Let me see you do something. The people that sit out just really push me the wrong way. Like, they're not hard workers. Like, if you think you're good enough, then show me. Then just go play against guys. Like, then you shouldn't need to hide. You should be able to want people to, hey, see me play at every moment you can.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't like it.
I always think it's funny when a quarterback just goes and, like, he runs the 40 and that's it. That was, like, his drill. He's like, I'll do the shuttle, too. What the hell? Hopefully I don't rupture my Achilles.
Like, the best is when Calvin Johnson goes and he's like, his agents are telling him, you know, don't do stuff or whatever. Then he grabs some other guy's cleats and runs the 4.35 40.
Yeah.
Like, that's badass.
It is. It absolutely is. But he is a freak of nature and not a human being. So, well, that's a totally different story. Well, let's get to baseball because we have, we're covering the spectrum of American sports minus the one that they play on ice. But if you're listening, you're a fan of foul territory. We know that you're not a huge hockey fan anyway.
Just an update. Donut toss, still 2 points and 2 rebounds.
That's not an update. That's officially not what an update is. And look it up because I want you to know what an update is.
I was really pumped up about what you had to say about baseball. Let's get into it. Your fantasy preview. I heard you got some guys you want us to take a look at for the upcoming fantasy season. What do you have for us?
Yeah. Well, to get it started with, I am totally plugged into fantasy, and I just for our readers and listeners, because you can read this also. We have the transcript printed out and put on WikiLeaks. But I am a certified fantasy baseball expert. If you want to win your league, you'll pay attention to every word out of my mouth. And that's the first thing. The second thing is we're going to break the preview down.
You do put the research in for fantasy baseball.
I do.
You do put the research.
I do the legwork.
You do the legwork. Like no matter what someone may think of what you think of certain people on an opinion basis, You do enough of the grunt work there that no matter what, it's going to be a half decent.
I also have a very robust gut. And
gut
I'm not talking
body.
About my stomach. I'm talking about my gut, which I use to make decisions. And a lot of it is that. I'm half in the old school, half in the new school camp with the scouting, though I do dabble in the statistical analysis, the sabermetric world. So, like I was saying, we're going to do 6 different installments. We're going to go division by division because it's more fun to do it that way. We can do some different things throughout the course of the lead up to the season, but that's going to be just the general format. And today, obviously, going to start in National League East, the most exciting division in baseball, possessing of 2 of the best teams in baseball. So, Carson, I guess what I had done is kind of broken it down by position, and we can go through each position. I got talk about some rankings, could talk about some tiers of players and also some sleepers and busts type stuff. So I figured we would start with the pitching, but I guess you can just kind of accompany me on that nice garden walk through the National League East.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll start off with some pitchers who, yeah, are they or are they not skill guys? Excellent.
No, they're not.
And okay.
It's an amazing position, and the demands of it are crazy, but they're not skill positions, and it takes a lot of skill, but they just don't have to have the athleticism. Starting pitchers that might qualify as Jair Jurgens comes to mind, just kidding. But we're talking about real athletic pitchers, maybe Sebastian. but at the start of these rankings, obviously, Steven Strasburg has to be at the top of this list. And it's 2013. It's not last year. The kitty gloves are off, and he's probably going for 220 innings. And I'm terrified as a Braves fan, but I'm really excited as a fan of baseball and pitching, good pitching more specifically, because he's going to be the best ball for the next 10 years. I dare anyone who thinks differently to tell me anything.
What if Mike Trout starts pitching?
Then we can talk.
Right. Okay.
You got me
okay.
there. All right. You got me there. Until Mike Trout.
Well, I would not. What?
Mike the Trout, ultimate skill position.
What
player.
If Mike Trout came out like, Len's like, I really worked on like my right hand in the offseason, like once every 5 days or 8 days.
Comes in as a reliever.
I'm going to be a reliever. I'll give you 5 innings
yeah.
or something. How insane would
that
be?
Up,
and why could he not do that?
Why could he not do that? Because that's never happened since Babe Ruth.
So it'd be one of the most gangster moves ever.
It would be. It certainly would be. And the Angels do have a shitty, shitty starting pitching staff. after Jared Weaver, I really think it's been. Maybe they could use him. But Strasburg is, if you can get him in your fantasy draft, absolutely do it. Every year, there are a couple starting pitchers that are just a cut above that are worth taking if you're doing a snake draft near the end of the first round. I still wouldn't go the first round, but in definitely in the second round. And Strasburg's the guy.
I got a pitcher question for you after this.
Okay. And really, one thing I want to briefly talk about, and then I'll let Sam ask his question. I like to think of fantasy baseball drafting, snake draft, in tiers. So you're looking, you're like in the third round, you've taken two hitters, and you're thinking, okay, I want to take a pitcher this time. What tier is available? And, you know, you have a couple of players that you like, and they both get snatched up right before you pick. You don't necessarily have to take a pitcher there just because you were planning on that. So that would be a question of an instance of seeing that all the guys in the tier that you liked in that third round slot were gone and instead taking another position. So that was a little long-winded, but why don't you ask me your pitching question?
So did Felix end up getting the money? Did he end up?
Yes.
Why? I understand the money, but why do you think he'd want to re-sign with Seattle? It's not like he couldn't get that money elsewhere.
He really loves Seattle, and this might sound like a cheesy answer.
They could be city for 5 years, right?
I'm reporting. No, they're getting better. They're going to be good. I think they're going to be good.
Tough division.
Very tough division. But if their young pitching pans out,
he can go. He could have gone anywhere though.
He could have, but he still had a couple years left on his deal. $175 million, dude. I mean, here's the thing.
A team that's never given you anything.
No, listen to me. I'm giving
your
answer. He loves the city. He loves the
really?
Fucking city. If you didn't, you need to look it up. Right after he signed the contract, he came down the elevator, came out into this open area in the Mariners complex, and they had let hundreds of fans in there. They were all wearing their K with a crown, King Felix shirts. All of the top management, every single person in the Seattle front office had put on one of these ridiculous yellow shirts and were standing around, and he comes out with his wife, and he just starts sobbing. He was, like, trying to speak to them, and he was just crying, and I think he really loves Seattle. I mean, he's just a loyal guy. He seems like a really incredible guy, and they're lucky. They're lucky that he wanted to stay.
What does she look like? You figure he'd have, like, a lot of junk in the trunk?
She had, respectfully,
I would think,
my
like,
respectful
very
opinion
junky.
Is that
I would
there
think
was junk within her trunk. But
I would say extra junky.
I'm going to guess that it's a bit like a
crunchy
situation with LeBron, where this was like his sweetheart from back in the day.
Oh,
back in Venezuela. But maybe
right.
not. Maybe not. But it is his wife. He did put a ring on it, unlike Mr. James. Wise Mr. LBJ. Marriage counseling is actually going to be on next week's show. So let's keep going with the starting pitching. So Strasburg is in a Strasburg sphere by himself. And the next tier down, Roy Halladay, I think it's still in that tier. Even after his rough season last year, everybody knows he was dealing with injuries. He is getting up there in the years. He's 35 years old, will be 36 in May. And, just an incredible career. Is one win away from 200. He's 199 and 100, which is an incredible record, especially given that he was on some very mediocre Toronto teams. But last year, a 4.49 ERA, only 11 wins. But before that, he had four consecutive seasons of a sub-3 ERA. In each one of those seasons, he threw 233-plus innings with 200 strikeouts every year. The dude is consistent, and I expect him to be back. So I think he's right up in that level, and I'm going to put him up there with Cliff Lee, Cole Hamels, his teammates, and Gio Gonzalez.
Roid head.
Gio Gonzalez is a dirty roid head, but I think he's going to get away with it. And if he does, the Nationals should rejoice because he is one of the best left-handers in the game.
So I was listening on the radio the other day. They said he's saying, Gio Gonzalez, that he doesn't even go to this place. Like, they got his information from, like, his dad going there once or something like that. Like, he's totally denying the involvement.
That sounds like a little too much.
Well, so he's going, like, totally. But I mean, like, he's diving in entirely, you know?
Diving out entirely.
Diving out. Like, he's going the total opposite direction. I wonder if he's telling the truth. It seems like
his lie seems too extreme. It seems like he's going over. I don't know.
Or maybe, you know, maybe it'll be enough to throw everyone off.
As a Braves fan with little goals, You know what, MLB? Investigate the man. Investigate him with verve. He led the wins last year with 21. I think he tied in the Cy Young voting, 207 strikeouts. He's a guy, he cut down on his walks last year. That was always a huge problem for him. In Oakland, he raised his strikeout-to-walk ratio up to 2.7, which no doubt was partly due to leaving that division with the Rangers and the Angels. But, you know, I think he's up there in that tier. I expect Cliff Lee to bounce back. Cole Hamels is just a beast as well. So I kind of see that as the second tier of the National League East pitching. Getting to the third tier.
Do you guys want a Rockets Thunder update?
Sure.
So James Harden playing against the Thunder, right?
Right.
92-87 in the fourth. He's already got 30.
Wow.
So he might be going for mid-40s tonight and get the W against his own team.
That would be
great. He's on my favorite team. Constant Harden to check this.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Carson?
I said the my favorite team, the Constant Harden are checking in. The namesake.
The Constant. Work. Yeah. That was a good draft pick. I wanted him. Had to settle for Cousins. Anyway, so that's the second rung of the ladder. Third rung of the ladder, getting away from my middling fantasy basketball team. It's going to be Jordan Zimmermann, who
really?
Is a straight thug, and Chris Medlin. And pretty much.
So the Nationals have guaranteed the best rotation in the majors. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like, hands down.
Well, no, not guaranteed. Los Angeles definitely could be up there. I'm not going to count out the Giants rotation based on what they did last year. If Lincecum rebounds, and Bumgarner.
So who's their 4-5? Who's the Nationals 4-5?
They've got Detweiler and
Detweiler, great year.
Yeah, Detweiler's a really talented guy. Picked up Dan Heron.
Holy shit.
Because the Angels were just trying to get rid of him.
They're going Strasburg, Gonzalez, Zimmerman,
Heron,
Detweiler.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, dude. Dan Heron is still good, please.
Oh, I think that was a great pickup.
Yeah.
I think it was a great pickup. And so that and Medlin is obviously the highlight of that rung. I think his ceiling is potentially higher than Jordan Zimmermann. He has to build up his innings, so he can, kind of just continue the gradual accumulation of innings after a Tommy John surgery, which every player has to do. But the Braves know how to handle that. We talked about it before. I think on the last show I predicted him to have a 2.8 or 2.9 ERA once the season was all said and done. I think that's very possible. He needs to continue striking guys out. I don't see any reason that the control and command would go away because that's just something it seems like he wakes up every morning and could throw one on the black. He just is God-given ability to control where a baseball ends up. And that is one of the most important skills. And guys have proven that if you have that, that can make up for a lack of a dominant pitch, a lack of a ton of velocity, or what have you. The next rung is the rung that I like to call aging veterans and young guns. And this is occupied by the artist formerly known as Johan Santana. You know what? He was the best pitcher in baseball not 4 or 5 years ago. And I just...
No, it was 4 or 5 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, not 5 and 4, not 4 than 3. So 3 or 4
not
years
ago. Not 6 then 7.
Not
8 then 9.
Talk then watch. And I think Johan, he's had enough time off. If pitchers go through injuries, he's had enough time off. He was never about velocity. He would definitely be able to live at 90 if that's all he can throw with that dominant changeup that he has. He's a lefty. A good lefty can get by at 90.
Once you stop dunking, you don't start dunking again. It's over, dude.
No, it's certainly not.
It's over.
Tim Hudson had Tommy John in his mid-30s. I mean, the medicine that they have now, the way that these guys rebound after a
Tim Hudson, great. So y'all have to be like an okay 3-4 option?
Tim Hudson is much better than an okay 3-4 option, first of all.
Yes, we've been
don't talk to
pitchers.
Me, you fucking cancer baby pitching staff.
The Red Sox pitching staff.
It's awful.
It's awful.
John Lackey. Clay Buchholz.
Clay Buchholz may want to stay out.
Garbage. He's truly garbage. That 2016 ERA was fueled by an unsustainably low BABIP.
John Lester
which
survived
our fucking listeners
cancer,
know what a BABIP is. Well, he's done with it. Now, focus on pitching, enough on the cancer. Why do you get me off track like this? I'm making a very good point in that Santana, Dan Heron, and Tim Hudson are three guys in similar places in their careers. Heron is a little bit younger, obviously. But three guys I still like in fantasy. Santana has the ability to strike guys out. Heron does. Hudson, not as much. But Hudson and Heron should definitely rack up the wins with the Braves and Nationals, respectively. And on that tier, I guess I would also include Detweiler, Nice, John Nice from the Mets, and Mike Minor. John Nice has really come on. The Mets just gave him a fat contract, 5 years, I think.
John Nice sounds like
million.
A name you made out. Is that a real person?
Yeah, it's a real person. John Nice. The hook nose of the Wild Witch of the West. Nasty, nasty changeup. He's a lefty. Mets just signed that 5-year deal, like I was saying. And he's a very talented pitcher. I like him in fantasy a lot. Obviously, it's hard to get wins on the Mets. But, you know, he's their ace. He's their stud. And he's the guy who they're hoping.
Ooh, the Mets. The Mets ace.
Yeah.
It's like saying the worst player in a little league team.
I think he could easily be better than every. In fact, I'm going to make a bet to the tune of that. Sometime after the show, Mike Minor will be looking to harness the success of his run down the second half last year and really throw that fastball with authority, but also use the slider as a punch. And look for Brandon Beachy. You could take a late-round flyer on him, stash him on your DL, be back mid-season. And if you can pick up where he left off last year, that was a guy who was sitting at 2 ERA leading the majors before he went down.
Braves. Braves. That's so good.
I love you sitting right here while I'm trying to do the show. That's always fun. Let's get to some pitching sleepers, because this is always more fun. We talked about the guys who we know about, but we have some other guys who are a little bit under the radar, some guys that aren't so under the radar who had their first cup of coffee last year, but some guys who could really help some contending teams and some poopy teams. So let's stick with the Mets rotation. And guys, they're going to be one of these rookies depth to not have
who's
them start.
The white pitching prospect they have?
And they've really been knocking on the door. Matt Harvey got some PT last year, and he absolutely tore it up. I mean,
ooh, I
came in with, I think, an 11 strikeout game his first game, and really continued to pitch well his entire time. He threw 59 innings, 10 starts, had a 2.7 ERA, struck out 11 guys per 9 innings, which is really dominant. Walked a lot, but no surprise there. Just showed really swing and miss stuff. Showed the ability to get big league hitters out. And so I think he could be a front runner for that position of maybe 5-starter for the Mets. Another guy for the Mets who is slated to possibly make a jump into their rotation is Zach Wheeler, who they traded transport to San Francisco Giants. Zach Wheeler was the Giants' top pitching prospect. He was really considered the guy who they hoped would be the next wave, who would kind of be the reinforcement for Beltran. And Wheeler's a guy, a lefty, a really talented guy, and I think the Mets might give him a chance also before this year, rated as the number 11 prospect by Baseball America and by Keith Law as the number 8 prospect. He's been solid in the minors, hasn't been dominant, but look for young Zach Wheeler or Matt Harvey to break in. And they're very viable fantasy options. They can strike guys out, especially Harvey. And so keep your eyes on them.
Asa, so going through the pitching staffs and these players that you think are going to be impact players in the coming year, you know, how do you rank the staffs in the NL East in terms of top to bottom? You talked to Sam about, you know, Nats being the favorite. How do you think the rest of the
how do you think they stack up? Well, the Nationals have to be the best rotation. I don't think there's any question there. Although it may not be as big of a gap as it might seem, because the Phillies still have three very, very quality starting pitchers. None of them quite on the level right now of Steven Strasburg, and I say that maybe with overconfidence because he's only thrown one season in the major leagues, but I really truly believe that. But the Hamels-Halliday-Lee combination is still deadly. It's still one of the best top threes in all baseball. So they're a close second, and the Braves coming in third. The Braves have some depth, have some promising young guys, but don't have too much in the way of proven starters beyond Tim Hudson, a guy who is in a little bit of decline, like we said. So the Braves definitely are there with their depth and, you know, with their kind of bevy of young starters. And then it's got to be the Mets after that, because the Marlins are just horrible. They have some prospects that they've acquired. They have some young guys like Jose Fernandez, who looks to be one of the best pitching prospects in all of the minors.
Who?
Jose Fernandez, look him up. But on the major league staff, it's pretty rough. Carlos Zambrano, he's there. They're asking him to step in and eat up some innings for a losing team. Sean Figgins, it should be pointed out, is also on the Marlins, which is pretty hilarious. So I guess there, Nats, Phillies, Braves, and then the Mets, and then the dirty, dirty Marlins, who almost aren't even a team on the in terms of major league teams. Carson, are you there? Can you hear me? Well, I don't know what the hell's going on with Carson. He's using Skype, which is challenging. We use Skype every week, and we love blogradio.com, but we do not love the program Skype because it makes things quite challenging. We're going to try to find a way to use Google Hangouts, and that'll probably help everything work a little more smoothly.
All right, so I have I'm going to give you five different like prospect type pitchers. Some are on the major leagues. I don't think others are, and you need to rank them for this year.
Okay.
All right, so
for fantasy
purposes.
Okay, cool.
All right, so Matt Harvey, Mets. He got a cup of tea.
Uh-huh.
Trevor Bauer on the Indians now, right, traded. Uh-huh. He got a cup of tea. Not a good one. Dan Straley, A's. Uh-huh. He played down the stretch. Tyler Skaggs, D-backs. He played a little bit down the stretch. Yep. And then Dylan Bundy, who is basically unhittable.
Dylan.
But he, my guy. But yeah. Did he play with the Orioles at all?
No, I don't think he got.
I don't think he did. But he might break camp with them, right?
Really?
I don't know. I'm not saying. I don't know. But would you be at all surprised if he gets called up in May?
Okay, that's a good question.
So that's five.
Right. That's five. Okay. So
does he come in and be like, you know, like what David Price was down the stretch for that team that won't
right.
Something like that?
Francisco Liriano.
Right. Anyway, so that was five for this year.
Okay. So we got. Look, can you say him one more
Harvey,
time?
Harvey. Bauer. Straley. Skaggs, who Bauer used to pitch with, and Bundy.
Okay. First of all, I'll say that I think I'm not breaking any new ground here, but I think that the young man from Baltimore, Dylan Bundy, I don't think it's Dylan, but
no.
It's Dylan Bundy, I think he's the most talented out of the group. But I don't see him pitching right off the bat. Maybe he gets called up, but I don't think it would be that early. If there was an injury. He's just so young.
So if I was going to ask you to rate him as the best prospect, he'd be first. He'd be first.
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm asking.
No, I know. I'm getting to that. But so for that reason, I'm not going to put him there. But I think for fantasy purposes, I might have to say Dan Straley is my number one. And it's not just a West Coast bias out here, a Bay Area thing, but just an incredible debut with the A's in that all-rookie rotation, basically. And Straley came out of nowhere. He wasn't even the most highly touted guy.
But he led the minor league A's last year, right?
Yeah.
He came
out of nowhere a couple of years ago.
He was not high pick, was he?
No.
Yeah, because he had, you know...
24th round.
Parker, who is a bigger deal than him.
Yeah, Jared Parker was definitely the hyped one. And even... Malone, who was in the Gonzalez trade, was a centerpiece of that. AJ Cole, a lot of different guys that were more highly touted than Straley, but he came on. So he's my number one because not only is he really talented through 40 innings last year, 7 Ks per 9, but he is playing for a really good athletics team, a team that plays good defense for him, and a division that's strong. But they do pick up the Astros, so they get a bunch of games against the Astros. The Rangers lineup doesn't scare me as much as it did, and the Angels does. But if you have 18 games against the Astros, 18 games against the Mariners. That's going to be some solid starts, some wins, some Ks. So I like Straley as the number one there. Number two, I think I have to go Harvey.
He was beast mode last year.
He was really beast mode. And I think, actually, you know what? I think I have to put Skaggs ahead of Harvey.
Really?
Yeah, I just changed my mind.
Really?
Yeah, because a lot of what fantasy baseball is about is the opportunity to start. And I'm pretty sure Skaggs has an almost guaranteed start.
Harvey doesn't have a guaranteed rotation spot?
And I don't think Harvey does. I think, depending on how Dylan G does, I think that it could go either way. So I'm not certain that Harvey would start the year
really
as a starter. So that's my only trepidation, because I'm pretty sure that Tyler Skaggs is locked in for that five role. I know Patrick Corbin got some time there last year, but even Brandon McCarthy's going to have to be competing for a spot coming off of surgery. So
so maybe not. Maybe he doesn't have a.
I don't know. I think he probably has a better chance.
All right, so you're going Straley, Skaggs, Harvey, then what do you do with Bauer and Bundy?
Definitely Bundy ahead of Bauer.
Bauer was Mr. Like prospect who's going to come up and play really well, and then all of a sudden the torch tears the mess, and all of a sudden everyone's low as shit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all those guys are really talented. I guess Bauer will probably get a chance with the Indians.
Right?
But, yeah, I don't know. I just didn't love him. He's got some real serious control issues, and that hurts you in the majors. You can really tear through the minors if you have control issues, because you've got.
But was he brought along too quickly now?
There's some questions about kind of his mental side of the game, and he's a bit of a quirky guy, which shouldn't be something that he's condemned for. Right. You have some of that,
yeah.
But you know, there's that too, and the Indians. I don't know, the team that did put together some talent this year, and it, I don't know. So
the thing with Bundy is I think, as we saw last year with the Orioles and calling up Machado, the young third base shortstop, whatever, I think they're okay to call up the young guy. They're okay to play the young guy. Like, some teams are slow. The Orioles are cool. So if Bundy comes out next year, he's at Double-A, and he's freaking throwing, you know, at like an under sub 2 ERA, getting like 9 Ks per 9, like not walking a lot of people. I don't see how they don't move him up really pretty quickly and get that guy in the rotation. And
Here's why. This is my opinion why. Because he's really young. And he was born in 1992.
Super young.
Which is weird to even think about. He was born in 1992. We were both 3 years old when he was born. And the thing is, he threw 30 innings in A-ball.
And like didn't allow a run
in A+. Right. But this is really, that was his first year in professional ball. So I think you just simply need to build up the arm strength. You simply need to build up the innings limit, because I know people make a big deal about that, but when it comes to a pitcher this young, he does have a big frame, so there's not a lot of concern about his delivery, but you need to see him get more than just 90 innings in the minors. And I think that's not an alarmist thing at all. I think that's an old school approach as well, that a guy, he needs more than one season of 90 innings in the minors to get a real run at the rotation. Now, down the stretch, I could totally see him getting called up. But calling him up in May or June can be tough, because you don't want to jerk him around. You know, you want to bring him up when he's ready to be up for good. But, you know, you're right. It's true that they have showed, the Orioles have showed, Buck Showalter has shown that he does trust the young guys, and it's a very merit-based system out there in Baltimore. What up to my hometown, Body Mo. And, you know, they have a staff that was a little shaky last year. So someone goes down with injuries, someone is totally unbearably bad, like Brady at times. And, you know, they may be feeling some urgency and feeling like, hey, we don't want to fall 10 games behind the AL's leading Toronto Blue Jays. We want to stay right in this. So
he'll be up, bro.
That may be the move.
He'll be up.
That may be the mystery. Dylan.
Also, wow. Like you're.
Okay. I could have done that a while ago. Yeah. I think Carson's setting off fireworks on Travis's Skype account, which is some bullshit. That was a good question. Thank you. I think Harvey is exciting, but you know, he was not considered as highly touted of a prospect as Zach Wheeler was.
Was he a 6th overall pick or something like that, Harvey?
Is he that high? I think Zach Wheeler is thought of as the
James
guy.
Harden just hit a half court shot.
James Harden just hit a half court shot, ladies and gentlemen. That is breaking news.
It's 109-103 because this is a serious game.
First.
Rockets Thunder, this is a serious game. I'll let you put it up there.
The NBA needs to get with it. We need a red zone channel for the NBA.
Red zone channel.
We need that immediately.
We need an alley-oop channel.
Alley-oop.
Like, once a ball goes in the air, like, real high, you need to go right to it to see if, like, DeAndre Jordan comes down with it.
You could just have screen and screen, like, four different screens going with their updating you. Because basketball, it's like, you know, you kind of look
away.
It'll
be called the oop-dater.
Oh, man.
The oop-dater.
Get on patenting that.
An alley-oop. Updater. Oop-dater.
I got what you're saying.
I know you're rolling.
I think our intelligent listeners
listening
to Foul Territory here on Blog Talk Radio, sponsored by Back Sports Page, can tell what the oop-dater would be all about. Carson's going to try to come back. He's too busy fiddling with fistfuls of dollar bills to get his computer working right, but we're trying to bring him back. Maybe he has shitty Comcast internet like we do.
So we're going to talk Euro hoops now?
No, not
Sam
yet.
Sam Myerkoff, EuroLeagueAdventures.com.
Absolutely not.
Get with it.
We're going to talk a little more baseball. We went through the pitchers of the National League East. Now we're going to get a little bit of
baseball
offensive side. Yeah, Euro baseballers. I'm into covering that. I would love to go to Italy and write about their baseball leagues, where Mike Piazza obviously holds all of the records.
Lenny DiNardo.
His last name is Pizza.
Lenny DiNardo.
Let's start at the most important position on the diamond, and that's catcher. And not a ton of offensive studs.
Most important?
Not a ton of fantasy studs here at catcher for the National League East. Some guys in the middle rounds just hit you with the quick hit. Carlos Ruiz was doing some Ritalin or a similar drug.
Adderall, is that a weed gun?
Adderall has. Yeah, Adderall is a banned substance by MLB. I think Carlos Ruiz was given a 25-game suspension.
Who cares?
McCann's coming back from surgery. Wilson Ramos was hurt. So it's guys with some serious question marks, but guys with a lot of offensive upside. Carlos Ruiz was raking to the tune of 340 before he went down last year. Brian McCann, he might be able to get as a pick later. He's going to miss about a month. But he should finally be healthy with a shoulder problem that's been bothering him for a couple of years now. And Wilson Ramos, who's been kidnapped before, is not kidnapped anymore. He's back in Washington.
Oh,
not being ransomed. He's just going to hit. And he's got to share time, a little bit of time, with stupid Kurt Suzuki. But I still think that they're going to give him the lion's share of the playing time. He's got thump. He's got power. He hit about 16 home runs this last season. I like him to equal that. I wouldn't necessarily go so high as like 20, but if he can hit 16, he'll pick up some RBIs in a good lineup. And the sleeper here is Travis d'Arnaud, who was traded to the Mets for R.A. Dickey. This is pretty much the best catching prospect in all the minors. Dickey, because R.A. Dickey is a Cy Young Award winner.
But why? They have another catching prospect that they could give.
No.
Catching prospect for Blue Jays.
Aaron Sepia.
CBS,
no, but Aaron Sebia is not the same. He has power, but he can't make
it. So I don't like that trade for the Blue Jays at all.
I do.
I don't.
This is their window. They're maximizing their championship chance. They just made the huge trade. They brought in Jose Reyes.
He can be an absolute stud.
Josh Johnson. I mean, maybe. He's a catcher, though. He's not a one-year wonder. He had a great 3 years in a row, first of all. And
you don't trade a young Andre 3 for Sir Mix-a-Lot, bro.
I don't think that's a good comparison at all. If anything, Dickey is the Andre.
Yo, it's 111-111. James Harden just hit a 3.
All right, enough of that. Travis d'Arnaud. I like the trade for the Blue Jays. You potentially have the best rotation in all the American League with that trade. And I think that's
really?
Yeah.
So what's the rotation?
All right, you got at the top R.A. Dickey. You got Mark Burley. Yeah, they say he's the number opening day starter. He's a National League Cy Young Award winner. R.A. Dickey, Mark Burley, Josh Johnson, Brandon Morrow, Ricky Romero.
That's rotation in the AL?
very well could be. I mean, I would put Detroit ahead of it right now, but I think they have a chance to be.
Because Detroit can go Verlander,
Scherzer, it's not great. And then Anibal Sanchez. And then,
oh, that's good. That's better. Well, Scherzer's the, you know, a knucklehead, but.
It's not guaranteed better, though. It's not guaranteed.
Well, I have Scherzer on my fantasy team, too. You keep him.
Hey, they win now. They sense that there's a lull. The Red Sox suck balls. We're not governed by the FCC.
Ooh, dude, James Harden was up to the Thunder people, too. You know,
but Travis d'Arnaud is going
to
play.
I guess they
for the
need.
Mets.
Well, I guess they need to make that trade because they have no pitching. Shit, without our AJ.
Travis d'Arnaud is going to play for the Mets and
catching.
He's seasoned. He's been in the minors.
We have an actual like power hitting catcher.
Potentially power hitting. He's got solid power. He definitely think he's going to be able to hit for average as well. All around game, good defender. That's the guy you'd love to have. Like I said, the most important position on the diamond.
So like,
with
more
maybe
power?
Like Posey. Not with more power. Posey's got very good power. If he didn't play in San Francisco, he might have 30 home runs.
Really?
It doesn't suppress as much for right-handers, but it still does.
Houston?
Yeah. Oh, shit.
God, that's like a, might be like one of the games of the year.
Of the century, perhaps.
Yeah.
It's going to be on SportsCenter for 45 minutes just over and over again. So keep an eye on him. And then Christian Betancourt, we talked about him last week. He's been invited to spring training. If he breaks, who knows? They might call him up. Be really interesting to see that. First base is another position.
Does Adralton Simmons play every single position this year?
No, just shortstop. One of the best defensive shortstops in the National League.
Oh, my God.
One of the best.
Anyway.
First base is kind of a middling situation. It's a lot of guys in different weird places in their career. It's Adam LaRoche, who the Nationals didn't seem like they wanted, but they brought him back anyway and got rid of Mike Morse, even though...
Why is everyone team like they don't want him, yet he continually just produces?
I don't know.
Maybe everyone thinks they don't want him, but he always produces.
He's not the most sexy, exciting player, but he's consistent.
Who cares?
He's going to strike out 150 times, he's going to hit 27 home runs, and he's going to have a giant nose and a unibrow. And you can count on it. And he's every year, he's consistent. Then we got young gun Freddie Freeman for the Braves. The lineup is even more stacked. I think he'll move down the lineup. We'll see how he responds to that. He got to hit a lot of 4 and 5 even last year, maybe 3 a couple times when the old man was out. But Freddie, he just needs to cut down the strikeouts. He needs to keep being a patient hitter, keep working the zone. The power is there. The power is going to come. I think if he just focuses on
it's there. It's
not trying to do too much. It's there. He's already hit 20. I don't think he's going to hit 30. I think he's going to be a consistent.
Who hits more home runs, Jay Hay or Freddie Freeman next year?
Jay Hay. Yeah. Jason Hayward's going to.
Who gets more RBIs?
Well, that's tricky because Jason Hayward might hit second. So in that case, it could be Freeman.
Who hits a better average?
Hayward.
All right.
Yeah. All right. For sure. Good question. So we got those two guys. Then we got the big slob, Ryan Howard. I'm just down on him.
It's just so quickly, dude. It's like at one season, it's like 2 seasons.
And the crazy thing is, I think now he's only in the second year of the $125 million that he signed. Yeah. This is only the second year. He's 33.
He only came up, he didn't come up to like 26.
Let Jim Thome hang around. He came up. He hit 58 home runs when he was 26 years old in 06.
I mean, is that his first year?
No, that was his second full year. Really, first full year. The year before that,
was
he
that his
300
best year?
Bats. Yeah. He won the MVP.
So his best year is basically his first full year.
Basically. And then he had 4 really good years after
he
that.
He won MVP, yeah.
He had 4 really good years, that one pretty good year, and then... You're hearing that countdown, but we're not going to stop. We can keep going. It's so important. But don't draft Ryan Howard. That's my advice. Just never draft him. Don't draft him. He sucks. He's too fat. He can't read. Don't draft Ike Davis either. Poor man's Adam LaRoche. And I'm not into Ike Davis.
He's kind of a wussy.
Total wussy.
Ike Davis a wussy?
Total wussy.
Okay, yeah.
The guy to keep an eye on, though, for the Phillies, here's your sleeper, Darren Ruff. He's another late bloomer. He didn't come up till last year. Was a career minor leaguer. He's like 27 now, and he has some subtly power numbers in the minors. I think he led the minors in home runs a couple years ago, and he could get plenty of time. I have him here at the first base. Could be in the outfield, but I think he will get some PT on an aging, fucking falling apart Phillies team. Second base is ugly, and so it starts with Dan Ugla. Get him in fantasy. If you don't have other guys with bad averages, pick up Ugla because he's going to give you power. You just have to compensate for his batting average elsewhere. If you're in an on-base percentage league, even better. He becomes very valuable. If you're in a league that doesn't use their 5x5 scoring, Dan Ugla could potentially be a stud because even when he was hitting 200, he still had a 340 on-base percentage, which is better than league average, which blows my mind. Cleveland is one every year, maybe. Dapping up Austin Rivers, his inferior, and backing up Ugly, we got Danny Espinosa. He can't make contact, but when he does, it goes a long way. He's fast, but is he more than a 2D hitter? I believe so. Chase Utley, Danny Murphy, the outfield. Enough of those infielders; they're not that exciting. We're gonna wrap today's show up with the outfield because this might be the best division for outfield in all of baseball. I'm just gonna start reading these outfielders in the National League East. And tell me, just hold on to your hats, ladies and gentlemen. Giancarlo Stanton, Justin Upton.
Did Giancarlo get traded now?
Jason Hayward, BJ Upton, Jason Worth, Ben Revere, Denard Span. That's a pretty legit list. And to answer your question, Giancarlo Stanton will be traded probably within the next year. He is going to be a huge chip wherever he ends up.
He's a stud.
With power down throughout baseball, he is absolutely a stud. He is one of the guys you can count on for bombs.
Like, whoever gets him is going to get, like, might be getting, like, a young Miggy. You know what I mean? Maybe not quite as good as an average hitter. Like, a young...
Just a young masher.
A young masher, right. But if you get him, his contract is bad. Like, I don't get how teams aren't trying to feast on him for him right now.
Well, I think they are. He's still a couple years away, just a mile into the soul blade. But after the trade he made, he came out and was very outspoken about how he was like, what the fuck just went on? Marlins just traded every good player on this team except me. I don't think he wants to be there. He probably doesn't. They're just going to milk it and see what's the best possible prospect package they can get. And it should be high with the declining power all around Major League Baseball. He is a guy who has pure power. And he and Bryce Harper are the two guys who really have that power potential going forward. Stan is a guy whose scouts say has an 80 on the 20 to 80 power scale. And there are only a few players like that every generation. So he used to be Mike Stanton. He's way cooler now. His name is Giancarlo, isn't he?
Yeah, it is cooler. The Rockets came back down like 12 with 7 minutes left.
They won it?
The Rockets are going to win.
Go to the game.
It's messing up. Right now they're up 120 to 116, but there's like 5 seconds left. James Harden with 46, 9, and 6 on 19
That's
shots.
Awesome. Wait, go to his line.
Insane.
14 of 9. Oh, dude. Oh, I wish we would have watched.
Against the Thunder.
Well, obviously. Yeah. Okay, guys. That's it for tonight's show. Just go somewhere on a computer, on YouTube, on SportsCenter, go look up what James Harden did in eviscerating the Thunder tonight, giving him a little taste of his bearded face. It's been real. Carson Phillips spots joined us for a little while and then got stomped the fuck out. But we're going to Google Hangouts.
Stomped out hard, man.
We're going to Google Hangouts, man. That's the only way to do it. Skype, we've had enough. We're cutting you loose. We're done with you. Thank you, Foul Territorians, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. It's been another episode of Foul Territory here on Foul Blog Radio, sponsored by Black Sports Page.